This is an ATSF iProfessionals industry insight into managing interactive media.
Hello, my name is Ailsa Barry, Head of Interactive Media at the Natural History Museum, London. My job encompasses both looking after the internet for the Natural History Museum and also the interactive media within the galleries, both the permanent galleries and the touring exhibitions. I also have a watching brief over the intranet for the museum. Because we're a scientific institution and do a lot of scientific research, the internet also encompasses scientific research databases and tools for scientists, as well as public-facing content. There's lots of talk about user-generated content, World Wide Web 2, etc. So all of those issues about allowing it not to be such a one-way directional machine, but allowing people to actually be involved and to put in their own information and for it to evolve in that way is always very interesting to look at. I think there's also got to be a slight kind of grain of salt about that, about what people will actually end up, how much people will actually end up interacting and adding their own content. So I think it's quite interesting to look at the research coming out of that and seeing how what percent of people are actually inputting into wikis and what are the percent of people that are actually just watching people input into wikis and how much resources therefore you should be putting into that and what's appropriate. I think it can be a band-aid that all content should be now user-generated because that's actually a cheap and cheerful way of getting content on the web or content on your site or whatever. I think there's a lot of issues around that. In this organisation, there's also ubiquitous computing so that we kind of make sure that computing is not just about a touch screen that you're playing on, but actually it could be a whole range of other devices which are giving you feedback and which are changing what you do. And then that kind of leads on to the whole concept of personalization. So within a museum, one of the exciting things in the future will be how we can actually make sure that people find the information they want to find both online and in the museum and bookmark that for use later on or for use in a school project, etc. So actually being able to get information sent to your phone or sent to some kind of device that you can then reuse and repurpose later on, or to, if you've only got an hour to be in the museum and your interests are wildly diverse, to actually be able to get you to those places and pull together the kind of suitable tour that you want. So those are the kinds of things that we're pretty interested in pursuing here. The other area which is quite interesting for us is this virtuous circle between the physical space and the virtual space. Many museums have kind of got this silo mentality where you've got a virtual museum and you've got a physical museum. And actually, you have maybe 100 terminals in the physical museum, but none of them relate back to the web. So they become two very different experiences. And that kind of ties into this ubiquitous computing and being able to get people to develop and use the content that they want when they want it. So that we want to make sure that people come to the website, understand what's there about the museum, perhaps plan their visit, then go on to the museum and maybe bookmark different areas that they like and get information sent back to either their personalized area on a website or on their phone, etc. So we're looking at that usage going forward. At the Natural History Museum, what we implemented a few years ago was a content plan for the year. That is because we have more requests for doing activity on the web and within the museum than we actually have resources to do. So we developed an interactive media strategy about 2 years ago where we looked at the kinds of things that we wanted to be pushing for the museum in terms of both scientific database development and tools and research, and also looking at innovative technologies that our audience might want to use and capture their imagination. And using that as kind of building blocks, we develop each year a content plan, which we then make sure that various stakeholders across the museum have agreed to, and we work to that content plan for the whole year. So in some ways, it's quite an easy process in that we have a kind of defined map of what we're doing. The difficulty then is actually kind of getting the resources and keeping that schedule. We review it twice a year to see whether or not those particular projects are still meeting some of the criteria that we're trying to develop. What we have at the museum is we ask people to send in a concept plan, and that actually writes out the description of what the project is going to be, who they think the stakeholders involved in it will be, when the deadline for developing it is, why it should be developed against the interactive media strategy, so what it's actually going to meet. So once that's been agreed, and I generally am the person who agrees that or doesn't, but if I'm not going to agree it, I have to have a very good reason not to agree it. And there's talks with the person who's put in or the group that's put in the project. And then after that's done, there's a project team which is set up. We put all of our projects onto a piece of software which we use called Basecamp, which actually tracks the projects all the way through. And we make sure that all the stakeholders involved are involved in the project and know at what point they should be involved for signing off or brainstorming or design. So that group then comes together and starts developing the key ideas, and it then goes through a kind of a range of sign-offs from look and feel, design sign-off to content, etc. I mean, often there's a whole range of content coming in from across a variety of disparate areas across the museum. So there might be scientific stakeholders, there might be external collaborators, it might be editorial content which is tied into an exhibition. So all of these different stakeholders need to make sure that they're involved and they're signing off at the appropriate point. Let's talk about how we cost out projects. A lot of the costing at this point, because I've been in the industry for quite a few years now, over a decade, is based on experience. I can look at a project and know generally how much something is going to cost, as can the rest of my team who've been involved in it. So we can do a kind of sit down and say, well, our estimate is it's going to be this amount over this period of time, add some contingency and fat. Often we do some of our projects in-house and some of the projects out-house, so we do some calculations about what we can take out of that external cost and what we can do internally, because we're always trying to keep costs down, obviously. And then when we go out to ask various people to pitch for the job, we will have that as a base amount in our mind. Well, from the museum point of view, it's very different because we're in a government organisation. So therefore, we have quite a strict tender process that we need to go through. Putting out a tender to a number of organisations or an open tender over a certain amount, which everybody therefore can apply for, and whittling that down. And that can be quite a long and time-consuming business. So it's probably quite a different situation from private tendering. Recognising quality is partly to do with experience and partly to do with user testing. So we do both. I mean, the people on the team have been involved in interactive media quite a long period of time throughout the whole team. So they know what works and know what doesn't work for their audience. But we always, whenever possible, do user testing, both for websites, which are quite complicated, and for which have various audiences that we deal with, but also for our interactors within the gallery. So we set aside time to put in that user testing. And we do user testing both throughout the concept development, but we also do user testing at the end to make sure that people can look and use the site or the interactive in an appropriate way before it's signed off. Just to go back to this concept of tying the physical museum to the website, we're looking at doing a lot of pilots that tie those two together. So one of the pilots that we've done was a pilot of a PDA, which you went around the museum and did a tour of the museum, and you could bookmark areas and then go to the website, which gave you more information. Another one is within the kiosks, which we're doing within our latest exhibition, which is called Dinojaws. And what we've done is an interactive trail within that. So on your ticket, you have a barcode, which is essentially an RFID tag, which gives you a unique code, which is unique to you. And what you're trying to find out is the mystery dinosaur that your ticket holds. So everyone within the exhibition gets a ticket, and that ticket holds the identity of a mystery dinosaur. So when you go around the exhibition, you put in your RFID tag as a scanner. That allows you to play the interactive game. And in playing the interactive game, two things happen. One is that the results from your interactive game on some of the games get sent to a database, which is tied into your unique code, which is on the website. So there's a special area on the website where you can go to afterwards. And the other thing is it pops up a clue about your particular mystery dinosaur on your ticket, and telling you to go off and look for that clue amongst the other dinosaurs, because we have, the exhibition has some big animatronic dinosaurs in it. So as you go around on this interactive trail, you're continually picking up clues about what your ticket is holding, and you're also sending information to a part of the website, which is personally your part of the website. So in that way, we're tying the two areas together. At the end of it, you get to guess your mystery dinosaur, and you can then go to your website using a unique identifier on the ticket and join the Dinojaw Club on the website, where you can print out your certificate that tells you you're a Dinojaw scientist, and also find other clues and information that's been sent back to the website for you to use and enjoy. And it's been very successful. Everybody, we've had over 75% of the people coming to the exhibition have used the interactive trail. And then we've got a fair substantial amount of people who are going through and converting to the Dinojaw Club afterwards. So that's one of the ways that we're saying that we don't want kiosks just to be a standalone fire and forget experience, but also to become part of the whole experience that you're doing. And that's the kind of thinking that going forward, and we're developing new parts of the museum, that we're thinking, how can we use that? How we can get people to actually use either an RFID tag or something to collect information that they can use later on, or to use on their mobile, essentially via kiosks or via some other form of computer interface. I guess one of the things about managing teams is that is to actually be quite clear about the different phases that the team needs to go through to reach the end goal, and also to have a fairly clear plan to reach that. I think developing interactive media, perhaps more than any other medium I've been involved in, can sometimes kind of miss absolutely every single one of its deadlines. So it's actually quite a task to hit those deadlines and to make sure they're managed on time, but also to make sure you have enough time for the brainstorming and the design phase, and then the implementation stage and the testing phase at the end. But to make sure that those areas are clearly defined, and that there's an understanding of the team that they do then have to move on to the next phase of implementation. One of my top tips is that interactive media is actually a medium, and it needs to be understood as that when you're actually trying to develop successful interactivity. It's not just a matter of a technical layer going onto other content. It's actually understanding it completely as a medium. And so you should understand it as a television broadcaster understands television, or a radio broadcaster understands radio. It's a separate medium, and it has the depth of different mediums, and it needs to be understood in that way. Another tip, I guess, is to understand that it's actually a team sport. And although with the birth of the interactive media, lots of people were Renaissance people who did everything. They wrote the theme song, they sang the theme song. Now it's very much a case of working collectively as a group to manage really quite complicated and disparate strands of a project. and to actually work together in that development. Again, in much the same way a film or a television program would be developed today.
That iProfessionals Industry Insight was a production from ATSF. You can find more on our website at atsf.co.uk/mim.